International Airport Center versus Citroen. Mr. Rubin.
Good morning. Nice to be here. This is a very simple issue. It's the adequacy of a complaint brought under the Federal Computer Act. I know the court has read the briefs, and I'm going to rely primarily on the briefs. I'd like to make these points. There is no doubt, and the district court found, that what happened here was an act of spoliation by an employee to a protected computer and done, according to the allegations of the complaint, after he planned to leave and compete. The district court was much concerned with the kind of transmissions, and transmission to the district court meant ship and deliver. And the district court said that Congress did not intend to create a wrong from a simple deletion. Well, of course, a simple deletion from a computer hitting the delete, you've got to do that or you can't operate the computer. And I think that the court will take judicial notice of the fact that you can always recover a deletion. This was a program that was intended to obliviate what was on the computer and did so according to the complaint. All the cases we can find hold all the other way. They're not involved with the technology, which is ever-changing. The test that they give is whether there was an intent to destroy a computer and whether they accomplished their purpose.
I was a little puzzled, though, and looking at the statute, so I'm looking at the page 8 of the appendix. So you have proceeded under the transmission section 5A1, but I notice 5A2 says intentionally accesses a protected computer without authorization and as a result of such conduct recklessly causes damage. And what I wondered was why you weren't arguing that Citroen had no authorization to access the computer in this way, that is to access it for the purpose of destroying your software.
We did that in the reply brief when that issue was raised in the context of a contract, employment contract, which said that he had authority to destroy confidential information when he left. And first of all, what we said was that no one has any authority when he's leaving and going to compete to do anything. His authority disappears, and that's what that Shurgard case said, number one. Number two, his authority to destroy. We cited Your Honor, who said that the court doesn't rule against people or hold that nonsense is unacceptable. But traditionally, nonsense is not a part of a contract. And at best, he's offering the contract that he's relying on is subject to two constructions. One is that he can destroy that which his employer has copies to, and the other is he can destroy whether the employer has copies or not. That's an issue that, you've got the rule that whatever, if there's any set of facts that will sustain the complaint, you sustain it. At best, they're arguing an ambiguity which has to be decided at a hearing. And I think the better reading is that you can't destroy something so that there's no record of what you did, or it could be an IRS-required document. It seemed to me, when we drew the complaint, that that was a perfectly obvious situation. When you are going to leave, and you then, without disclosing you're going to leave, do anything to a protected computer, and in this case introduce a program in, which all the cases say satisfies the transmission requirement, then you have violated the act. And I might say that was what this court did in the Mitra case, when some when a fellow didn't even enter the computer, he just messed up the radio beams that transmitted to the Madison, Wisconsin Police Department. And that's enough. And that's enough here. And the court, I think, was also hung up that it was an insider, which the cases make clear doesn't make any difference. This morning, we filed with you and served on counsel a case that was decided after we filed our briefs, called Lloyd versus U.S., and we gave you copies of it. It's in the clerk's office. And the court says, like the North Texas case, which the court distinguished, I think, improperly, remote or direct access is not important. It's what you do. Now, a Texas judge, they had a lot of these cases in Texas. I don't know why. Your Honor is very eloquent, but he was more eloquent. There's one case he said, you can't hog-tie Congress, a good Texas phrase, and he read the thing very liberally. And I want to point out to you in conclusion that this is a very serious issue. As we cite in our original brief and our opening brief, the FBI and the Computer Security Institute published results of a survey, and it's on the Internet. You can take judicial notice of it. 52% of those responding had from 1 to 5 internal breaches of their computer. 59% reported abuse occurring by insiders that abused the right to use the Internet access, which may have happened here. And 10% responded experiencing insider theft of proprietary information through use of computers. So this is a very serious problem. And the district court got hung up because it was an insider and because there wasn't a Federal Express bringing delivery of this material. It was carried in. Shouldn't make any difference. I'll reserve what time I have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Rubin. Mr. Marmer?
Good morning. May it please the court. In the district court, Judge Anderson properly concluded that plaintiffs' attempt to find a federal forum for their essentially state law employment claims must fail because they had failed to satisfy the transmission requirement of 1030A5A1.
Well, what about the intentionally accessed as a protected computer without authorization? As I understand the structure of the statute, that section, 5A2, is particularly targeted on an insider. I'm not suggesting the first section doesn't include insiders, but the second seems particularly on point describing what your client did.
The answer...
Destroying his employer's software.
First, Your Honor, I don't believe there's any finding at all that my client destroyed his employer's software. There's an erasing of data, but nothing dealing with destroying the software.
I don't understand you. I mean, the data, you mean the software.
That's the operational system.
But the data, you're destroying the person's data. I mean, that's as bad as you can do to a computer. Right?
Well, let me answer what I believe to be Your Honor's question, which is, what about 5A2? Suppose they had pled under 5A2 even though they did not. And I believe the answer is that had that claim been presented, which it wasn't, not ever, the argument that I believe we would have made there is that this statute has a distinction throughout textually between the text which talks about without authorization or exceeding authorized access. And the phrase exceeding authorized access is actually a defined term in the statute. And so the Congress has very carefully distinguished between situations in which someone has the authority initially to be dealing with the computer and those where the person does not. And on the other hand, then, when you have someone who has the authority but goes beyond the authority. Here, there's no question that Mr. Citron had the authority to be dealing with the computer. It was his laptop, his Snap server that was assigned to him. Therefore, what you see up in A1, without authorization or exceeding authorized access, or in A2, without authorization or exceeding authorized access. But when you come into 3, without authorization access, And 4 picks up again without authorization or exceeds authorized access. But 5 is one of those that's limited just to without authorization. Now, this is a defined term, exceeding authorized access. So what I'd say is that
defined
it seems...
Defined where?
I'll find it in the... It's a defined term at the back. Let me see if I can... If you have the appendix site, it's on page 11, appendix 11. It's... under 6, the term exceeds authorized access means to access a computer with authorization and to use such access to obtain or alter information in the computer that the accessor is not entitled so to obtain or alter. Now, it does not appear to be happenstance that a defined term, they took the trouble to define it, they put it in some sections and not in others. And the absence of the defined term exceeding authorized action in 5A, 1, 2, and 3 for that matter, would indicate that the Congress has very carefully sorted those sections of the statute where they do want to pick up people who have access to begin with and then don't use it. So, for example, in A1, where they're dealing with foreign relations, national defense, and nuclear information. Presumably, the Congress was thinking, you have two different kinds of problems. You have people who don't have any right to get into the computer at all that hack in. That would be without authorization. But you also would have the problem that someone who works for the government and has access to the computer now goes and use that access to get to information they shouldn't get or use it in a way they shouldn't. That would be exceeding authorized access. And to take that defined term and read it in here...
Well, 2 is not limited to national... It's not limited to national security.
No, A1 is not limited to national security. It includes foreign relations and nuclear atomic energy power.
No, but look at A2.
Sure, and there's no question.
Which also has the exceeds.
Absolutely, and that's another instance. I didn't mean to say it was exclusive. Financial institutions, again, a situation where you could have either of two situations, someone who shouldn't ever be getting into the computer without authorization, or someone who's working at a financial institution, has legitimate access to it, but uses it for an improper means. That's exceeding authorized access. And since we see quite plainly and carefully that the statute sometimes uses without authorization and sometimes couples that with the defined term exceeds authorized access, we must conclude that the Congress, when it defined a term exceeding authorized access...
Are there cases that explain that difference?
I don't believe this has ever arisen. I have not seen... I can't tell you that there's never a case our research discloses.
Let's look at 5A1 then for a sec. So I take it your argument is that transmission is limited to some kind of transmission has to be something where you reach the computer through a phone line or a cable?
I don't think we'd say quite that. I think what we would do is, again, draw a distinction based on the text of the statute, and that is the statute uses two distinct terms. It uses access and it uses transmission, and those appear in different sections of the statute. So access, which I believe is plainly intended to be the broader concept, shows up in a number of the sections of the statute. Transmit, or transmission, appears in certain other sections.
Well, if you take a floppy disk and put it into a computer, and the floppy disk contains a virus or some malicious code, you're saying that's not a transmission because it wasn't done by means of what? I don't know what the difference is.
But what I would say that is accessing the computer.
Why isn't that transmission? What's the difference between transmitting to a computer with a floppy disk or by a wire or wireless or Ethernet or what have you?
Well,
in both cases the action is electronic. It's not physical, right?
Absolutely.
It's not like whacking the computer. You put in the floppy, and then there's an electronic transmission from the floppy to the hard drive. So what's the difference between that electronic transmission and one that goes over wires?
I think the answer, Your Honor, is that the Congress obviously intended to distinguish between these two situations because they chose different words to describe the conduct. Access... Which plainly in
No, they're different. No, access is different. I mean, access means you shouldn't be. I mean, you yourself made that distinction. You shouldn't be, with that computer. You shouldn't be there. So in that case, transmission is the broader concept, and if you have if you have lawful access to the computer, but you transmit something into it that destroys the data, why isn't that covered by 5A1? It creates such a ridiculous loophole that people can do anything they want to the computer as long as they do it with a disk instead of by, wireless or cable.
Well, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I don't think there's anything at all loophole-ish about it, and quite the contrary. Since we're dealing with a criminal statute, we would be starting with the proposition that we ought to be certain that before 5A1 amounts to a violation carrying a 10-year prison term, that the Congress intended it.
There's no certainty requirement interpreting criminal statutes.
No, absolutely, and I don't mean to suggest there is, but the notion that transmit is read in this statute.
But you ask me, what is the rational difference? I suppose I develop a powerful antipathy for the federal judiciary. I'm tired of being a judge. I'm going to get back at these people. So I realize if I send some destructive virus into the judicial system and destroy the whole judicial database, then I'm guilty of this act. But if I come into my office and I stick a floppy disk with that virus into my machine and cause the disk to transmit its virus to the network, then I'm innocent. Well, what sense does that make?
Well, the example you've given, you would actually have violated 1038.3, and so that would be covered by the statute, but by a different part. So there's no surprise there. I think the point.
Yeah, but what sense does it make?
You're dealing with a federal computer. You're dealing with a government computer.
Yeah, but that's not important. All right, so I work for a bank.
That's a financial institution.
Why destroy the bank? And I use it with my floppy disk instead of with the internet, instead of going over the internet. So what earthly difference does that make?
You would still be then covered by A2A because it's a financial institution. And the point, I think, is what we're starting to identify in these examples.
Not a financial institution, an airline, a taxi company, anything you want. What difference does it make?
The difference is there's no federal interest. The difference is that you have a distinct federal interest present in financial institutions and in government computers.
Look, let's forget about those enumerated institutions. Take any company you want. That transmission provision applies to companies outside of the ones named in A, right?
But the problem with
Your Honor. Answer my question step by step.
Okay, let me try again.
The transmission provision applies to companies that are not and entities not specified in A.
Correct?
Okay.
Correct.
Now,
5A1.
Take two cases. In one, my mode of transmission is the internet. And in the second, my mode of transmission is the insertion of a disk.
Yes.
Now, why should they be treated differently by the law?
Because the Congress is so prescribed.
No. That's your
interpretation. You're asking me why, as a practical matter, should we treat them differently?
Yeah. What is the sensible difference?
I think the sensible difference is that you're going to pick up patterns of conduct that are going to have fact patterns associated with them that are distinct, so that when we remove it from the pristine hypothetical, in many instances, when we look about access versus transmission, we're going to be talking about someone, if they shouldn't be entering a physical premises, where you're going to have that criminalized under either other federal statutes or state law. Whereas when you're talking about transmitting from one computer to another, you may miss safety.
That's sophistry. I'm thinking of a case where you have an authorized accessor, an employee, a malicious employee, and he has this laptop given him by the company, and there are two things he can do. He can use the internet to screw it up, or he can stick a floppy disk in it or a CD and screw it up. And in both cases, a transmission occurs. That is an electronic transmission from the disk or from the internet to the employer's network. And What is the practical difference, if any, between those modes of transmission?
Well, of course, Your Honor has just stipulated that there was a transmission in your hypothetical.
No, the question. There is certainly a transmission in the literal sense.
Yes, but that's what we're struggling with, Your Honor.
Now, so what is the practical difference that makes you want a narrow transmission so that it excludes the case in which the transmission occurs from the floppy disk or CD to the hard drive?
Because I'm trying to read the statute to give meaning to Congress's words where they... The problem with transmission, that
transmission... easily be defined broadly enough to embrace the transmission from the code in the floppy disk to the code in the hard drive. So you have to have a reason why these two forms of transmission should be distinguished.
And one, which I'm trying to explain, Your Honor, and you may not find it persuasive, but let me at least try this out on you, is that the interpretation of transmission that Your Honor is embracing is so broad that it would require us to read out of 1030A5A1 all of these words. Knowingly causes the transmission of a program, information, code, or command, and as a result of such conduct. Because if we read all of that out of the statute, we have exactly what Your Honor is reaching for.
I don't know. What have we read out?
Read out knowingly causes the transmission.
Well, I don't know.
Because the statute would affect exactly the result Your Honor is seeking if it had said whoever intentionally causes damage without authorization to a computer.
You've lost me completely. Knowingly causes transmission knowingly cause transmission of
program, information, code, or command.
Information. Why isn't that an exact description of what happens when you stick this disk in and you cause transmission of malicious code to the code of the computer?
Because Your Honor is identifying is absolutely the feature that is correct about all computers, and that is we always communicate with them electronically. We have to. And therefore, transmission... It's true when you hit the delete key.
You can smash a computer. That's right. A different way of harming it.
Exactly.
Transmission is the particular concern here, and as I say, you can cause transmission using the Internet or using... a disk or something. I don't get this difference.
Well, because, Your Honor, I see my time is up.
No,
because
ahead.
If we actually take transmit and interpret it so broadly that it includes any time we're communicating with the computer electronically, that would sweep in even the delete key example that the plaintiffs agree can't be swept in, and it reads out some further limit.
Mr. Rubin was correct. When you press the delete key because you made a typographical error or something, you're not intentionally causing damage to anything.
Yes, but
it's
your
only
example,
when you destroy code that
yes,
you cause
but,
so damage.
Yes, but your example, Your Honor, now is sorting between permissible conduct and impermissible conduct exclusively on the intent associated with the conduct rather than the nature of the conduct itself.
Intention causes damage. You don't damage a computer when you delete. When you use your delete key.
You do under the statute. The statute includes the deletion of information.
So, quite plainly,
damage would be defined
because
as...
Because, as you said, we know what deletion is. Deletion is shifting code from one part of your hard drive to another. It's not eliminating anything.
Well, we don't know that, actually, Your Honor. The fact of the matter is that when you hit it...
When you press the delete key on your laptop or whatever, you're damaging your hard drive?
You certainly expose the hard drive to that risk. None of us knows when we hit the delete key whether the computer will next assign data to it. No one knows that. And to distinguish here to say it's a criminal violation if it makes it increasingly likely that the data cannot be recovered, either it's wrong to delete data or it's not. It can't possibly be the case that the statute turns on how difficult it is to recover it, because the minute you hit delete...
Deleting and damaging are two entirely different things. Now, this is like saying, Mr. Marmer, that if I empty my garbage pail, I have damaged my possessions because maybe I accidentally dumped out something I didn't want to.
I think the statutory well, Your Honor, I will tell you that at the moment, while we are reaching on the question of how broadly to interpret the statute for transmission, it is absolutely clear that the concept of damage under the statute is intended to be sufficiently broad that the elimination of data in any form would qualify.
But you understand how ridiculous that is if we were talking about garbage, right? Garbage means you're deleting possessions you no longer use.
You're saying there's no value.
The difference is, of course, that when you throw out the garbage, as soon as it's picked up by the garbage man, you've lost it. Whereas when you delete data, when you delete stuff from a computer, you've just shifted it to another part of your computer. You haven't lost anything.
I think as a factual matter,
that's damage.
But the factual assumption in Your Honor's question, I take issue with.
Don't you use computers? Don't
yes,
you
I do.
Computers. Don't you know what happens when something is deleted?
I do.
Where do you think it goes? Goes into the atmosphere?
No, what happens is the computer believes at that point or assigns that area of its memory for further use. In other words, delete says you no longer have to reserve this portion of the memory. It's no longer protected. It is available for other functions to occupy it. As you next enter any kind of instruction to the computer, where the computer elects to write data is not related to where you just hit delete or not. It is entirely serendipitous.
No. Only if the memory is full is it going to type
I don't believe that's correct.
Of course it's correct.
I don't believe that's correct. I think that there are certain inherent features that can shift the memory numbers off by one so that when you hit delete, the notion that when you hit delete, you are now not committing any kind of crime because a forensic-type person can come in and recover the data. I ask you to pause if that's really where you're headed with the statute, because that seems to be a very unlikely place to land on the statute. That is to say that we're going to test the criminal conduct based upon the difficulty of the recovery of the information.
But look,
let's suppose that they delete it.
Mr. Marmer, look how far you've strayed from the difference between a transmission and between your very narrow concept of transmission, which limits it to the internet, because I mean clearly, when you're working on your accessing a computer on the internet, you're using your delete key, right?
Yes, but Your Honor just read into my remarks
that we were limiting transmit to use of the internet.
That is not correct.
Damage equals deletion, and therefore, if someone is working through the internet and therefore, you know, doing transmission, you're saying that that person is committing a crime.
Your Honor keeps adding in working through the internet. I just want to make clear we are not limiting transmission to through the internet. Now let me turn to the question you asked, which is if you hit the delete key while you're on the internet, have you committed a crime? And the answer is you would if you did so with an intent to cause damage.
Fine. And why shouldn't that be exactly the same test when you do that when you are doing that with your, you know, working your floppy disk?
And again, for the very reason that when we look at the way these words are used throughout the statute, the Congress has chosen to use the word transmit in a much different way in each of the sections than Your Honor is suggesting. And for Your Honor to say, wouldn't it be more sensible for the Congress to have addressed all of these fact patterns as if they're identical, may as a matter of policy be a legitimate concern. As a matter of statutory construction, we submit it is not. Transmit has a different meaning when you read it in each of these sections of the statute, and it is plainly intended to involve communication from one source to another in a way that cannot be satisfied simply by having one computer erased. Those are policed
in one source from another.
Yes, like one computer talking to another.
Well, why can't a computer talk to another by you're copying something from the first computer onto a disk, inserting the disk into the second computer? Why isn't that one computer talking to another?
Can you define it that way? Yes, of course you could. Does it make sense to define it that way? Does it stretch the sense in which transmit
why
is used?
Why doesn't it make sense?
Have here, in other sections statute, we'll talk about communicate, deliver, transmit.
Why does it not make sense? Putting aside your semantic arguments, why does it not make sense to speak of one computer can talk to another you know, send a letter to another by means of a disk as opposed to through the internet or over some
because you're
other
trying to
network.
Pick up different kinds of conduct. You're trying to pick up, on the one hand, conduct that is either requiring the physical entry into the premises in order to accomplish the wrongdoing versus conduct that may be by someone who has authority versus conduct by someone who has authority but has exceeded it. The Congress seems to be sorting very carefully among these three kinds of fact patterns and will say in some instances with one set of our fact
but
patterns that we're addressing.
Agree that an employee who uses the internet, he falls under this transmission provision, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. So what's the difference whether the employee transmits from home or while in the office uses the disk?
The difference, I think, practically speaking, is one of ability to locate. In other words, it seems to me that one of the features that the Congress primarily was concerned about is the difficulty of locating where wrongdoing occurred and where it emanated from. And so they seem to be focused in part upon where people are behaving. You see that that's more vivid in A2C, where they're talking about information from protected computer where it involves interstate or foreign communication. That's plainly one where they were worried about what happens when the attack comes from offshore. We know from the legislative history and the way these things get embraced, not on this one section but in others, that the Congress was very much concerned with the question of where is the troublemaker located, does the troublemaker actually have authorization, and has the troublemaker exceeded his authorization? Those are three important sorting mechanisms. And to say, well, the Congress, when it said transmit, it just meant to be very broad, could have accomplished exactly that result if they had simply said in A5A1, whoever intentionally causes damage without authorization to a protected computer. That would do exactly what Your Honor is trying to accomplish. It would wipe away all of the distinctions. It would allow anyone who acts with a wrongful set of mind to cause damage to a computer to be held responsible under 5A1. But the Congress added an awful lot of words in there. And to say that those awful lot of words don't have a meaningful sorting role to distinguish between that conduct which is legal and that conduct which is illegal, and instead we will sort among all conduct based upon the intention with regard to the action, reads out all of those phrases. In addition, when you look at transmit, it appears in several parts in this statute. It plainly is intended to convey a sense of communicating from one source to another, and that is absolutely consistent with one of the variables that the Congress was addressing. I know I'm way over time, so I'm not going to overstay my welcome.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Marmer. Mr. Rubin, how much time does he have? 7 minutes?
I'm very jealous of the court's docket, and I will be very brief.
Okay.
All I want to do is, when I went to law school, I think in the gay 90s, it was still the law, and it is today, and you can find it in the restatement. What I'm dealing with is authority. The restatement says, unless otherwise agreed, the authority of an agent terminates if, without knowledge of the principal, he acquires adverse interests. That's what happened here. At least that's what's pled. And so there was no authority here. Once, and there's no dispute. Once he decided he was going to leave and compete, which is in all of the papers. I rest my case. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument.